Love-Driven Ministry, Commentary for the August 29th, 2026 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Unlike so many, we do not peddle the Word of God for profit. On the contrary, in Christ, we speak before God with sincerity, as though sent from God. 2 Corinthians 2, verse 17. This ministry, Stillwaters Ministry, was begun in 1997 as a small internet bulletin board ministry. As I learned HTML programming and experimented with different animations and links to add content, others with more experience ridiculed those efforts as amateurish and simplistic. However, as the decades passed and my programming skills improved, the ministry has grown to have a digital presence in 150 countries with over 160,000 visitors annually to view the content, listen to the podcasts, access links to various resources, make prayer requests, and subscribe to weekly emails, all for free. I was in the pastoral ministry in the Midwest when my wife developed multiple sclerosis. With a small child less than a year old and a disabled wife, I was needed in the home to fill in as needed, and I resigned my pastoral position to care for them. I had been assigned to a three-church district that meant lots of travel that would have prevented me from being home for them. After leaving the pastorate, we resettled in eastern Washington State, where a more favorable climate could potentially slow the progression of the multiple sclerosis. Initially, we were supported in the Davenport area by my wife's family, and I found work in Grand Coulee setting up mobile homes. We relocated to the nearby small community of Electric City so I could be nearer work. When the bottom fell out of the housing market, I was laid off and worked as a dishwasher in a local restaurant until I was hired as advertising sales manager for a local radio station. This allowed us to purchase a used but recently new mobile home. We had been renting a house with rotted out flooring and a defective electrical panel before that. Now we were still renting a space, but the home was ours. We felt blessed that step by step, things were gradually improving. But because of the advertising contracts I had been signing with local businesses on behalf of the radio station, the couple who owned the station decided it would be the perfect time to sell the business and make a profit. They did, and the new owners had their own family crew, so I was out of work. We fell behind on space rent at the Coulee Dam Mobile Home Park, even though I earned a little traveling for speaking engagements at churches around the conference and delivering wholesale candy for high school sports events and food for restaurants in the area. Major wholesalers would not stop to deliver for these small mom-and-pop restaurants, so they had to close for a day each week to make trips into Spokane to restock. I was able to step in and do that for them so they could remain open and make a profit on those days while still getting the supplies they needed. Still, it was not enough to cover the rent, and I fell behind by $800, which was a lot in 1983. A member of one of the churches I spoke at paid off the rent anonymously, even though I had never mentioned the need. We later passed on that same amount to the Worthy Student Fund of the Seventh-day Adventist Church I was baptized in, also anonymously. When they decided to build a third power plant at Grand Coulee Dam, the federal government decided the mobile home park would need to close as the additional water flow threatened its stability. Since we were momentarily current in our space rent, they would pay to move us, and we were relocated to Spokane, where there were better work opportunities. After relocating, I ended up working for the state, which provided a stable income and adequate medical insurance for my wife's care. It also allowed us to enroll our son in parochial school because we were now where such schooling was available and had the means to pay for it. While church members constantly debate the pros and cons of such schools, it provided a foundation for our son to matriculate to a prestigious university and earn a master's in architecture, eventually becoming a principal in an esteemed architectural firm. While my wife, with some difficulty due to her illness, was able to attend our son's 12th grade graduation at Upper Columbia Academy, her health had deteriorated to the point she could not attend his later graduation from Tulane. A friend from work who was a nurse volunteered to stay with her so I could attend. It was a time of joy mingled with sadness. Joy to see my son reaching a major milestone, the first in our family to receive a postgraduate degree, and sadness that his mother was reaching the end stages of her disease. Her death broke us both in ways that linger still. Even though we both realized its inevitability, death is still an enemy to us all. I share all of this as background to understand the reasons behind Stillwater's ministry. I felt a calling to ministry from a young age, before I knew of the Seventh-day Adventist denomination I now belong to. This had a lot to do with my attending Walla Walla College and majoring in both theology and biblical languages. The pastoral ministry seemed to be my destiny. When I resigned from that career, I struggled over whether that calling was where I was meant to be. The local church continually tried to confirm those pastoral leanings. I was made local elder, school board chair, church board chair, and was often sent to fill in with speaking assignments when churches were between pastors. But while the local church and sometimes the conference made use of whatever talents they felt I had, these various assignments also reminded me that I was no longer the pastor I had once felt called to be. It was shortly after we moved to Spokane and my income had stabilized that I discovered personal computers through work. The first time I encountered one, I pushed a button that brought up what was called the C prompt, that looks like a C with a colon and a greater than sign. I could not get it to do anything else and thought I had broken it, so I stayed late to learn what I had done and how to fix it. I joined an IBM PC users group and learned basic programming and how to install and run software. Eventually, I progressed to running my own internet bulletin board service, where I learned and used hypertext markup language, also known as HTML, assembler, and advanced basic programming languages to create programs that would become the foundation for Stillwater's ministry. This was a ministry that I could pursue while remaining at home to care for my wife as her condition deteriorated. Ironically, it turned out to be the foundation of the ministry I continue to operate, as my old age has brought about my own age-related loss of mobility and crumbling of my physical abilities. At this point, I want to mention the uniqueness of this ministry. As I have watched ministries come and go, I've noticed that part of that process includes begging. A ministry no sooner establishes itself than it begins begging for handouts. Some call it tithes, some call it offerings, some call it love gifts, but it all amounts to the same thing. It strongly suggests that the ministry cannot survive without a river of gold flowing into the denomination begging for those offerings. In many cases, it is crass manipulation. God will not bless you unless you give money. You cannot expect to go to heaven if money is not forthcoming from your earnings. Such fear-based manipulation continues because it works. But gifts given out of fear have little to do with love. Worse still, It presents us with an impoverished God who cannot support his own work. It is also ironic that God buries gold so deeply in the earth if he needs it so desperately. During the growth of Stillwater's ministry, people would offer financial support, and this caused me to find other models of ministry in the Bible. One passage that I remember being the inspiration for a children's song at a local Baptist church I attended as a child. "He owns the cattle on a thousand hills," the song told us, reminding us of God's limitless wealth. The passage in the Bible reads, "I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens, for every animal of the forest is mine and the cattle on a thousand hills. I know every bird in the mountains and the insects in the fields are mine." Psalm 50, verses 9 through 11. But this raised the question, if God is so wealthy, why are his servants always begging for money? And why are they manipulating people through fear to get it? Much of this money goes for two primary purposes. One, it goes to pay a clerical class who have no other means of support. And two, it goes to purchase, build, and maintain an enormous global real property presence. While strong arguments may be made to keep the offerings flowing for these purposes, it does not mean there are no other models of ministry in the Bible. In the Old Testament, we have the model of Naaman the leper offering Elisha gold and other valuable gifts to thank him for curing him of leprosy, a story found in 2 Kings chapter 5. The prophet Elisha refused those gifts, implying God's mercy and compassion cannot be bought. But his servant Gehazi followed after Naaman and begged him for gifts, and he became cursed with the leprosy that God had healed in Naaman. Elisha glorified God in his compassionate character, while Gehazi diminished God, making him look as though he was unable to care for his own. In the New Testament, we find the example of Paul's ministry. While Paul was an evangelist for Christ, he was also a tent maker, sharing this trade with Aquila and Priscilla. This allowed him to carry the gospel throughout Anatolia and Greece without begging for support or being a burden to the fledgling churches. When the elders from Ephesus met Paul in Miletus, he said to them, "I have not coveted anyone's silver or gold or clothing. You yourselves know that these hands of mine have supplied my own needs and the needs of my companions." Acts 20, verses 33 and 34. Following Paul's example from its inception, Stillwater's ministry does not accept gifts, donations, or tithes. The only thing we covet is the prayers of those who see value in this ministry. On the rare occasions when supporters have sent us donations, we send the money back, no matter whether the gift is sizable or small, with a cover letter explaining that God is well able to support his work and has been doing so for us since 1997. As the psalmist said, "I was young and now I am old, yet I have never seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread." Psalm 37, verse 25. What is more love-driven, a ministry that burdens its flock with constant begging for money, or a ministry that is self-supporting and needs nothing because God has provided everything, not according to their desires, but according to need? Thank you for listening to this commentary podcast. You can find the written version of this commentary, as well as hundreds more commentaries and podcasts, at our website at www.visitstillwaters.com. You can also find links to other resources and also other articles and sermonettes written by the author. Once again, that's www.visitstillwaters.com. May God richly bless you and your family.